Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Okay, box office top 10, Mark Kermode, Mark Gatiss, Jeremy Dyson, in that order. At number 10, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
It's the best thing that Val Kilmer and Robert Downey have done for a long time, but they've done so much which is stinky that that may not be the greatest recommendation, but it's fun if completely empty.
I loved it.
He did love it. Absolutely. He texted me.
It is funny, isn't it?
Great. It's just a very entertaining film. It was a wonderful afternoon, that was.
And when he texted you, did he do anything about it, like go and watch it?
Well, it's difficult at the moment because we've got a young baby. So
it's
cinema.
A perfect excuse.
Doesn't wash.
Number 9, Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
I was in Bristol over the weekend and talking to some people about this whole thing that Katzenberg has said, oh, the movie underperformed in America, and we're marking a loss because it underperformed in America. Well, A, you know, taking $75 million, that's some underperforming that I would like to have. And B, my suspicion is that Katzenberg is just saying this stuff because, exactly as we'd always said, Nick Park just went, who cares, and made the movie that he wanted, and now Katzenberg feels a bit raw, but it's great. It's absolutely great. It's exactly what it should be, and, you know, it did just as well as it should have done.
I'm in it.
you can't top that.
Box office in America. That's going on my CV.
Exactly. But it's fabulous, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely fabulous.
Yes,
and you are?
I'm Miss Blight. I'm one of the villagers. I sat next to Nicholas Smith at the premiere and I got very excited about sitting next to Mr. Rumbold. But I was doing an interview on the carpet on the way in. They were saying, tell me about your character. And I said, I did it 2.5 years ago. I have no idea. Because
really?
It obviously, as you know, takes a tiny amount.
We got Peter Salis on the programme on Monday, which everyone's excited about. Just because he might say cheese.
Yes.
have you seen it, Jeremy?
I haven't. The baby thing keeps coming back.
We'll come back to that.
But perfect for that, you know. Yeah.
Should we
audience?
Just miss you out in this?
Well, I wish that that wasn't the case. I can spout ill-informed bigotry.
Okay,
it's my job.
Nanny McPhee, number 8.
You know, I liked it more than I expected. Colin Firth, who's in one of the new releases this week, is he's Colin Firth and he's good fun. And my kids really loved it, and nobody other than me seemed to be surprised by the cannibal joke at the beginning.
I haven't seen it. Reece saw it and loved it. It's by Christiana Brand, who wrote Green for Danger.
Green for Danger, one of mine and Mark's favourite films.
Yeah, Alistair Sim.
Well, the novels, I don't know how close the film is to the... They're called Nurse... She's not called...
Oh, really?
She's called Nurse Matilda in the novels, yeah.
But it looks good. I'd like to see it. It's very Christmassy.
Actually, oddly enough, the colour scheme is not dissimilar to the colour scheme of The League of Gentlemen. It is puce.
But you said you haven't seen A League of Gentlemen.
The film. I did see it because I came on and was rude about it.
Number 7, In Her Shoes.
It's rubbish. It's absolutely terrible, hideous, awful. Everyone involved should be, you know, sent away never to make a movie ever again.
Is this the rude wretched one?
No, In Her Shoes.
I wish.
It's Cameron Crowe, isn't it?
No. That's Elizabeth Town, which is worse.
Another one. Who is this one?
No, this is, which, oddly enough, directed by Curtis Hanson, LA Confidential. And it's a story about two sisters. They're very different, but in a way, they're very much the same. And they discover how much the same they are by meeting Shirley MacLaine, who's their grandmother. And she's a bit kooky and a bit crazy, but actually, she loves them.
Well, my favourite thing about it is that on this piece of paper it says In Her Shoe,
which is a much better title.
That was the first one.
What did they find in
Her Shoes? Was the follow up. Constance Gardner at 6.
Won a whole bunch. Exactly as predicted, it's won a whole bunch of awards. Of course, it's got a movie. It's like a movie running around with a T-shirt which says, give me an award now. Rafe is all right. Rachel Weisz is great. The direction is, it meanders all over the place. I'm not entirely sure that he's managed to get to grips with the story. I think it aims high and it strikes its target about half the time. But it is, in the end, a bit dull.
I feel similar. So I'd never go and see that film ordinarily if I hadn't been on tour and had nothing to do in the afternoons. But I rather enjoyed it for that, I think. It's very worthy, but then it's quite compelling. And I love the palette of it. It was kind of electrified.
The visual
the colour scheme was like...
Which is not...
I asked him.
No, but I was just filling in.
Yeah. If I say to him, what's the palette like? I'm sure he can answer.
Okay.
Yes, I rather enjoyed it in an unexpected way.
No point in asking you, is there?
No, but I do. I read Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy for the first time last year.
So?
It's John McCarrick.
He's getting there.
I know, but I read a book by the same author.
I think that's legitimate.
It's out of date.
Listen, there are people in this country who review movies on exactly that basis, so...
But let's not mention them. Hey. Number five, Transporter 2.
It's not as good as Transporter 1, largely because it doesn't have a sequence in which your man there, who's in that terrible Guy Ritchie film, Revolver... In the first one, there's a scene in which, for no good reason at all, he takes off his shirt and wrestles in oil. Well, there's a very good reason for it, and wrestles in oil. In the second film, they've gone completely hetero, and it's just basically women running around in their underwear with guns. Boring.
Which you've rather men in oils?
Yes, absolutely.
Mrs. Henderson presents at number four... You know, sorry, Mark, have you seen Transporter 2?
No, I think I used to have it in my Hot Wheels kit, Transporter 2, that's how I remember it.
Mrs. Henderson Presents, number four.
If you look in the dictionary, under quaint, there is a picture of Mrs. Henderson Presents. It is just so quaint, it's not true. It's clearly made to be sold to the Americans. You know, those chippy Brits, when they were being bombed in the Blitz, they just carried on taking their clothes off because they were jolly hockey sticks, and it's just, you know... And, as I think we cleared up last week... Will Young, Mr. Happy, no intersection.
Thank you. I think we did saw that. If you look quaint up in a dictionary of etymology, it'll take you into all kinds of...
Yes, which we're not going to go into.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose at number three.
It says here the Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Okay, the Exorcism.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose. It's not as good as the Exorcist, obviously. I mean, it's a mess, but there's half a good film in it. There's half a bad film in it as well, but there is half a good film in it. And the half good film is the bit when they're actually doing the exorcism, which is quite creepy and quite scary, and is done from two different versions. One of them that she's demonically possessed, and one of them that she's just schizophrenic.
The trailer, everything's
the
in the trailer.
The trailer's great, isn't it?
Yes,
the trailer's got everything in it. Whoever cut that trailer should get an award.
But it's actually like, there's a 5-minute sequence of the film where all the stuff happens, and that's the trailer.
Yeah.
It's quite dull. It's a courtroom drama, really, with a bit of exorcism thrown in.
Yes,
and then Crown Court. When your baby gets... What's your baby's name?
Eve.
When Eve gets to about 2.5, that could be her first movie.
Exorcism.
Of Flight Planet 2.
Well, you know, again, half a good movie. It starts, you think, great, great, and then you go, oh, it's the other film, and it's not Red Eye. It's not the Wes Craven, because at least Red Eye knows it's an exploitation movie, and it's a Wes Craven movie, and it grabs you and it says, hey, we're going to go along for a ride, it's going to be terrifically good fun.
And it's got Cillian Murphy
in it. Who is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the setup for a movie is you're on a plane sitting next to Cillian Murphy. That's it. You don't have to do anything else. But with Flight Plan, it's like, oh, we're very serious, character study, Jodie, very,
And isn't then it just The Lady Vanishes, isn't it?
It is. The Lady
window.
Vanishes in
they
a
They do Miss Frye on the window.
It's a window thing.
Yeah. It is. The Lady Vanishes and a bit of Panic Room in a plane, and then halfway through it goes like that, and you go, oh, I can't believe that after all this time you've gone for that. And then it stops.
What's happened to Snakes on a Plane? That's what I want to know. I saw a thing for it on the internet.
snakes on a plane,
which is that, and there was stills from the set with loads of snakes and somebody going like
what
that.
A great idea.
Right. I don't know.
It sounds like a Tintin exclamation, though, doesn't it? Great Snakes on a Plane.
And the UK's number one, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
You know, obviously better than the first two, obviously not as good as the third one, narratively confused to some extent. But my 7-year-old thought most of it was great, but did think the end was extremely scary and was upset by it, which I think proves that the BBFC have judged it just right with the 12 certificate. Under 8, you're stretching a point. It is dark. You didn't like it, did you?
No, I enjoyed it. I just thought it wasn't as good as it should have been.
It's not as good as Azkaban.
Certainly not as good as Azkaban.
It is, isn't it? Quite. Yeah, right.
On a Saturday.
I was at Manchester against Liverpool. I'm a Liverpool fan.
On a Sunday.
Where I was sitting, it looked tempo galore to me.
On a Wednesday, there's a time to talk.
I'd love to know how Newcastle can justify spending £14 million on a pair of donkey's rear ends.
Every single game he gets substituted and he gets more and much more frustrated himself.
And a time to listen.
All the City fans and all the City players, don't lose heart.
So, right. You're an Everton fan?
No, I'm not.
No,
Man
go on.
City
Man City fan, that's right, yeah.
Good win for Everton today. Yeah. Really good win, much needed.
606, the UK's biggest football debate from the UK's home of live sport, 5 Live.
I suppose I should thank David Wellings in Great Worley for suggesting that you and me, Mark, are the thinking person's cannon and ball.
I don't even know. What does that mean?
They're TV comedians. They're in the
I know who they are. I mean, I had television when I was young. I've got television now. One of them's in...
I'm a
Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, isn't he?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
It's the one with the moustache is still in.
Tommy. But
no,
you see,
Tommy Cannon is out. Bobby Ball is still in.
You see, you have to understand that for me, because I've got young kids, the Cannonball have been surpassed by the Chuckle Brothers. Chuckle Vision. Who are, in fact, Cannon and Ball for young people.
You wouldn't want them in your house, though, would you? if they knocked on your door and said, can we come in for a glass of water, you'd say, not a chance. The Reverend Robert Titley, who's the Vicar of All Saints in West Dulwich, says, can he thank Mark for making Exorcism of Emily Rose, despite its flaws, his film of the week? On his say-so, and despite the panning it's had elsewhere, we went to see it, some of the horror genre stuff, like repeated and unfeasibly heavy rain, ghoulish faces that seem borrowed from the Evanescence Going Under video, really doesn't come off, but there are strong performances and pressing questions, such as the place of religion in the public sphere, and the tension between rationality and rationalism that make it well worth 2 hours of anyone's time.
Good. And who is that from?
The Reverend Robert Titley, the Vicar of All Saints, West Dulwich.
Excellent. Well,
that's
there
why
we go.
I said him at the beginning.
No, I know. I just wanted you to say it again.
Okay. So that's enough correspondence for now. Let's do something that's new and interesting. Where the Truth Lies.
New film by Atom Egoyan, who's the director, Canadian director, originally of Armenian descent, who made The Sweet Hereafter and Exotica, of whose films I'm a very big fan. This is an upmarket sort of noirish erotic thriller about a pair of nightclub entertainers who were very, very big in the 1950s and then split up after a scandal involving a girl, a bath, some ice, some lobsters, and, you know, death.
What?
And, yeah, exactly. Okay?
Hang
now,
on,
girl bath, ice, lobsters, death, and I'm not going to go any further than that. Okay? It's like a scandal was, you know,
I'm prepared to take your word on that.
Thank you. Now, Alison Lohman is a journalist who goes to interview them in the 1970s to find out what happened back in the 1950s when they were at their top of their game, being a pair of nightclub entertainers, very much like Dean and Jerry. So, Colin Firth and Kevin Bacon, both of whom I think are absolutely on top of their game. Colin Firth was on the programme last week and was talking about the film, and particularly about the fuss that it had with the American censors. The American censorship system is just completely rubbish. They basically have no way of dealing with adult movies. So what they say is that all films should be open to absolutely everybody. You know, you go with your parents if you're under 17, except for a little small group of movies that they say are adult, but actually that kind of means all filthy and disgusting and grim. They had this thing, the NC-17 certificate, which was brought in back in the 90s, and Showgirls was the thing that kind of launched the NC-17, and it failed really badly. So now the basic thing in America is, rather than having what we have, a 15 certificate movie, 18 certificate movies, very respectable. Respectable movies in America are R-rated, which means anyone can see them as long as they go with a parent or, you know, adult. And then NC-17 is either art house or niche or smut. And in the case of Where the Truth Lies, they gave it an NC-17 rating. Atom Egoyan tried to cut it, but in the end gave up. And they said, oh, we're going to just put it out unrated. And it's a shame because he's tried to make a very mainstream movie. And as a result of all this stuff that happened in America, they ended up without a certificate. So that isn't very mainstream at all. Over here, it deserves to
do
better.
What happens if it hasn't got a certificate?
You can put it out unrated, but some cinema chains won't play it.
Right.
And some newspapers won't take adverts
for
it.
Who can go and see it if it's got no rating?
Well, what happens is the cinema tend to judge for themselves who is able to see it. And it's a really peculiar thing. But if an NC...
What, the bloke in the kiosk selling
No, the cinemas kind of here. Have membership policies. And I mean, it's really odd.
Okay.
It's really, really odd. I mean, the point is, the movie is an adult movie. It says on the BBFC thing, you know, it contains strong sex, drugs, language, all those things. It's clearly made for adults. But in England, we say, fine, it's an adult movie, great, have no problem with that, well done, you made an adult film.
America, this is an 18, isn't it?
Yeah. In America, they run around like headless chickens if you make an adult movie. It's, oh, no, it's a film that's only suitable for adults. That must be absolutely horrible. Basic Instinct, meantime, is an R-rated movie. Like, go figure. You can take a kid to see Basic Instinct. I mean, you know, how completely squiff is that? Anyway, so Atom Egoyan is set out to make a very mainstream movie based on a novel by Rupert Holmes, who, strangely enough, trivia fans, is the guy who wrote the Pina Colada song.
I was going to say, Escape.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't know this, and it's just something that came up in trivia on the IMDb.
If you like Pina Colada.
And to Getting Caught in the Rain, if you like Making Love at Midnight or something. If you're not into health
food, don't
sing it. No, that, whatever. Anyway, him. Well, he also wrote this novel, Where the Truth Lies, upon which this is based. And there are two very fine performances in the middle of it from Kevin Bacon and Colin Firth as these nightclub entertainers who fall out due to a scandal, who are now then seen later on in the 70s with terrible sideburns trying to, you know, refashion their lives, each with their own version of it. The thing about the movie is, it's got very bad notices over here. I mean, the reviews have not been good at all. I think one of the problems is a simple genre problem. It is basically a Greg Dark movie with A-levels. It is an erotic thriller with a degree. If you like, and incidentally, I have no problem with you liking this, if you like Night Rhythms, Animal Instincts, if you like all those sleazy straight-to-video movies, which is a bit of plot, a bit of sex, and, you know, but they're 90 minutes long, they're nuts and bolts thrillers, they know what they are, and there's nothing wrong with that. Some of them are really interesting movies. Greg Dark is a really interesting filmmaker. Jag Mundra is a really interesting filmmaker. Atom Egoyan happens to have wandered into this genre and made an upmarket erotic thriller, you know, which is clever, it's stylish, it's smart, it's funny, but it is basically a B-movie. And people have a problem, which is either they don't want it to be a B-movie, or they judge it as an A-movie and they say, well, you know, it's tacky and cheap. And it is all those things. It is tacky, it is a bit sleazy, it is a bit cheesy. It's fine. It's a thriller. It's an erotic thriller. It's a piece of grown-up entertainment that's playful, and it's not meant to be taken entirely seriously. And there is a dark undercurrent in it, and in fact, when the secret is revealed, it's quite a smart secret. And it's interesting that the MPAA rejected it, I think, not on the grounds that they said they did, which was, oh, it's too explicit, but in fact, because some of the subjects it deals with are not subjects that they like to talk about in polite society in America. It's not a great movie.
Like Lobsters in the Bath.
Like Lobsters in the Bath. Yeah. It's Atom Egoyan light to some extent. It has none of the deep soul of Sweet Hereafter, or, I think, of Exotica. But when I saw it at Cannes, I thought, it's kind of okay, and I've seen it again since then. Since then, I've really liked it more, because I think it's nicely made, it's vibrant, it's enthusiastic. Yes, it's a bit silly, but hey, it's a genre movie, and people just have to get their hat on about this. It's like, there are things like thrillers, there are erotic thrillers, there are action movies, there are comedies. These movies set out to do a certain thing, and it does it perfectly well.
If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, if you're not into yoga, if you have half a brain, if you like making love at midnight in the dunes on the Cape, then I'm the love that you looked for, right to me.
Me and Escape. And then it turns out that it's his wife, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's the punchline.
Repeat chorus twice and fade. So yeah. Rupert Holmes contributed what to this film?
He wrote the book based. Right. He also wrote that musical, the Edwin Drood Mysteries. I mean, apparently he's a multi-talented all-rounder, if we don't take into account the Pina Colada song, which is clearly an abomination.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk, 85058, 331. This from Harjinder Singh saying, I saw Last House on the Left this week.
Yeah. Yeah, that is that. Actually, no, it's a. I mean, it's a very important film. I was one of the witnesses for the defence of that film when it went to appeal at the BBFC. Yeah, that we appealed it being released uncut. It's still not available uncut in Britain, and I was one of the specialist experts arguing for its defence. And I did so badly that not only did the appeal uphold the cuts, they actually doubled them.
Maybe the Chief Justice was a fan of Pirates of the Caribbean and just thought they'd do that just to be spiteful. Yeah. Andrew in Aberdeen, like to know if Mark's ever seen a film, thought it was utter tosh, then watched it again and changed his mind.
Well, Blue Velvet is the classic case. I hated Blue Velvet. I absolutely hated it. And I stormed out and wrote a really angry review, and then somebody came up to me and said, you were completely wrong about the movie. And they got really, really angry with me. And then I had a sort of one of those Pauline moments, much like Nick Cage does in the film, in fact. And I went back and... Nick Cage in Wild at Heart does. And I went back and I saw it again and I thought, actually, this is one of the 20 greatest movies ever made. And I told that to David Lynch. And halfway through that story, when I'd only got as far as having stormed out thinking...
He fell asleep.
Okay, I won't tell you the punchline.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, halfway through, he was starting to look really uncomfortable. Like, you know, why is this man having a go at me? But I was trying to get him to the point where he understood the effect that it had on me.
Amanda says, the Chuckle Brothers, three times funnier than Cannonball Evergreen. Jane says, I think you're more like the Thinking Women's Hinge and Bracket.
Oh, well, that's okay. That I'd accept. Right. To you.
John
to
in Cheshire, a few weeks ago I watched Spoorloosh, as recommended by Mark, as one of the most scary films ever. It may be the fact I've seen too many horror films in my life, or perhaps because it's 18 years old, but the film let me down. Chilling performances, yes, but the ending is not as shocking as it was back in the 80s. The Kill Bill version of the scene was infinitely more chilling.
Oh.
We can't wait for your review of Narnia next week, which I've just had a preview of.
Anyway. Yes.
is there a sense of the fact the further back you go, with a horror film particularly, the less scary it is?
Well, I tell you, I don't think so, because the weekend I was...
The exception, I suppose.
Yes.
Sorry.
Exorcist, obviously.
No, I was thinking of Nosferatu, actually, the original, which is terrifying.
Yes, but also, just over the weekend, I was doing an onstage with somebody, and we showed the central scene from Eyes Without a Face, the Georges Franju movie, and which is actually the face transplant sequence, oddly enough, and it's absolutely terrifying. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is still every bit as scary as it was originally. Last House on the Left is still really... There's a real mephitic air about that film. You really think, you know...
A what?
A mephitic air.
What's a mephitic air?
You know, as in Mephisto. It's real Mephisto, evil. Yeah, I mean, did you really think you're in the company of something
I
bad?
I didn't know that there was a mephitic? I don't. Is there? Can you prove to me that mephitic is
yeah,
a word?
Yeah, let's ask the nation. Everybody, email in and tell Simon that there is a word.
No, don't do that. Give me an example of where the word mephitic has actually been used somewhere in either a review or.
Well, and then what I it's like, you know, I say table, and you say, well, prove to me there's such a word as table. What am I going to? I haven't got a dictionary to hand. Google it. Put mephitic
so
into
mephitic
Google.
So mephitic is.
This is the new heavily advertised wannabe Ealing-esque black comedy, you know. And of course, being British, it's got Vickers and Grannies and Nookie and Ponds and, you know, all usuals. Ponds play a very big role in it. So the story is Rowan Atkinson is, guess what? He's a vicar. It's a real stretch for him.
He's never done that before.
I know. He's forgotten his work and constantly is neglecting his wife, who's by Chris Scott Thomas. And she, therefore, is being driven into the arms of Patrick Swayze, who is a golf pro. And meanwhile, the family is all falling apart because the son's at school and the wife is going hot, wild, and crazy. Yada, yada, yada. Along comes a new housekeeper, played by Maggie Smith, who, unbeknownst to the family, was in a former life a killer, killed a husband, and has spent a huge amount of time in jail. And we know this because it's in the opening. Uh-huh. Okay, but they don't know. Okay, the laughs never stop. You see, the thing about it is, it's kind of less hum than oh, for heaven's sake. It's not
just hum, then. Really,
it's well, it's look, it's not awful. It's not anything. The trailer makes it out to be this laugh riot black comedy. It's not. There are surprises. It's like an episode of Vicar of Dibley meets episode of that thing called Summer Murders or whatever it is. But with all
indeed.
The laughs, right, but with all the laughs taken out, it wants to have that grim black humour of, for example, Julie Walters' movie Intimate Relations, which couldn't figure out whether it was some kind of lively comedy or some really dark social document, and that consequently ended up being neither. Some terribly parochial British humour with Rowan Atkinson as the vicar, and he's a bit bumbling, and then she teaches him how to look up jokes on the internet, and then he starts to discover things about life, and she meanwhile is sorting out all the family, but she's doing it, killing people. And that's the gag. You sit there going, you know, if you took the murders out of this, it would be a perfectly passable half an hour, tea and cakes, Sunday afternoon. You put them into it. What happened? Did you have two movies that you needed to tape together because they weren't long enough? Remember Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Right, Atkinson as a vicar.
Exactly. It's like no weddings, lots of funerals, and lots of ponds. It's got that.
Where do the ponds come in?
Because that's what they do with the bodies. All that end up in ponds, and then
the lobsters.
No, and that lends to endless kind of contorted plot things about the ponds going to have to be drained and blah blah. And honestly, I was just spent the whole thing thinking, who is this aimed at? What, you know, I'm a very big fan of genre. I like genre. I like a film to know what it's doing. I spent the whole of Keeping Mum thinking, what are you? Are you a comedy? Are you a satire? Are you a perky? It's like one of those things that Ben Elton writes, when you just think, are you joking or is that straight? Do you really like Queen? Are you having us on? I mean, I just spent the whole movie in a state of slight exasperation, despite the fact that the cast do their very best. I mean, Maggie Smith's always good value. Sure, she chews the scenery, but boy, does she chew it well. Kristen Scott Thomas could do this stuff falling off a log. Rowan Atkinson does the vicar thing as Rowan Atkinson does the vicar thing. And Patrick Swayze, well, he's Patrick Swayze.
As soon as I saw the poster with Rowan Atkinson as vicar,
the instant reaction is,
oh, well, he's done that.
I know. Well, that's really what it felt like. I mean, it really felt like, you know, we've done this. I've been here, but every time I've been here before, I've understood under what context. I mean, at least when he does the vicar in Four Weddings and a Funeral, it's funny. And the trailer makes this look funny, and the poster makes it look funny. And you sit there going, come on, let's get the laughs. Where are the laughs? Where? Oh, we're not doing laughs, we're doing character study. Except Maggie Smith keeps killing people.
So it's not a whodunit then, because clearly she.
No, it's a why done it,
and it's not
what
where did
am
you
I
do
here
them,
for?
They...
It's the pond is the answer, yes, and it's really not good. It's really, really not good, but it's really not bad enough to get cross about, and that makes me even more cross.
Helen Wilde, mephitic.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's, even if this word exists, which it's clearly
which
about
if...
to, it's just one of those words that if you use it, people are going to go. Why did you use that word? Because
Can I just say...
No, Helen Wilde, of, relating to, or resembling, mephitis, right? Poisonous or foul-smelling.
Fine!
So not relating to Mephisto, okay? So it's got nothing to do with Mephisto.
Poisonous, evil,
offensive
bad.
Offensive to the smell. Mephitic odours. The Richard Holmes in Coleridge's Darker Reflections, 1834. The mephitic stench from the bilge became overpowered.
So who was that by? Coleridge.
Richard Holmes wrote a book called Coleridge, Darker Reflections.
Okay, so there we have it in a reputable literary source.
Yes, Dale Peck in the New York Times. Over everything presides a sort of
mephitic
fog. No, mephitic fog.
Yeah, but
which is a pervasive sulfuric stink. In fact, this is going to become my favourite word, actually.
There we go.
Gore Vidal, Johnny Middlesbrough.
Don't start with Gore Vidal. We'll be here all day.
Well, I was going to finish with him, actually. Gore Vidal used it a few times to describe the foul swamp atmosphere of 19th century Washington.
Okay.
So, there you go. So but it's got nothing to do with Mephisto. So you were right, but not completely right.
Okay. So like better. All bickering couples, we can end up by both saying sorry.
Are you hinge or bracket, by the way?
which one?
I don't know.
I don't know. Oh, either.
Okay, well, Joe's not.
You haven't said sorry.
Oh, sorry, for what?
Because I said sorry. Now, this is how we end the route. I say sorry, and then you say sorry too.
What else is new?
You see there. Fine, that's it.
What else is new?
Oh, fine. Are we going to do travel?
Well, Joe is here.
She didn't want to come in when we were arguing.
That's all right.
I don't like the atmosphere.
It's mephitic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit sulphurous.
Never mind, there's my music. Deep breaths.
What?
I don't know why I'm laughing, because there are also so many problems on the motorways at the moment. It's a Friday. Anyway, Christmases are coming. Here we go. M8 in Glasgow, westbound.
It's 11 minutes to 4.
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers is indeed the film that we were talking about off air.
Yes.
so that was a pointless thing to do. Narnia next week.
Yeah.
And King Kong the week after that. And is that it as far as the blockbusters?
That's the biggies, isn't it? That's the big fan. I mean, I'm really looking... I've seen Narnia already, but I'm looking forward to King Kong enormously. I read there it has just been premiered because somebody wrote a review of it in the paper today.
So Narnia versus Kong, basically.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. It's a shame, you know, to get to Christmas without Lord of the Rings, really, isn't it? But, you know, I understand that that's long gone and I have to get over it.
Charlie, on this, as I was so pleased to hear Mark mention, The Sweet Hereafter.
Yeah, it's
such an exceptional film. No one I know seems to have heard of it. Sarah Polley's performance is extraordinary and she's an extremely underrated actress.
Yes, she is, and she is really great, and it is a fantastic movie.
Andy in the West Midlands. I bumped into Mr. Kermode in my local Chippy last night, where we had a brief conversation.
Hey?
Can Dr. Kermode please confirm...
No, not me.
...that this was a dream?
It was a dream, yeah.
And if it wasn't a dream, he owes me for the chips.
Okay, yeah, no, definitely...
If people are starting to dream about you, you've made it, mate.
Yeah, no, I definitely wasn't that, because I was in the Torrance Trip in Lymington last night.
Very good. So, Where the Truth Lies, done that. Keeping Mum, done that. If you want to see more Rowan Atkinson dressed up as a vicar, what else is new?
Doom, you know, after Super Mario Brothers and Street Fighter and Tomb Raider. Oh, hooray, there's another film based on a computer game. So, I mean, computer games are rubbish, right? Movies based on computer games are doubly rubbish. And watching Doom, you could sort of feel this great tidal wave of social inadequacy sweeping all over you. I've started to get acne as a result of that screening. I mean, I'm smelling bad body odour, nice. You know, anorak, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, if you're interested, The Rock is in particularly uncharismatic form, which is strange because when he came here, he was rather nice, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Fine. Well, he's obviously had a charisma bypass since then. And he's the leader of a crack elite team who are going to be sent to, it's another place, Mars, I think it is, to go and shoot a whole bunch of aliens.
Reading loud and clear, General.
Union Aerospace has requested assistance to contain a level 5 breach at their Olduvai facility.
How many personnel involved?
6 scientists are under lockdown in the high security lab where the breach occurred. Another 79 UAC employees are on site. ARC travel has been suspended.
What's the objective?
Code red. Assess level of threat.
Assess level of threat.
Protect and retrieve UAC property. Maintain quarantine at both ARC portals by any means necessary.
Use extreme prejudice?
Extreme prejudice. If necessary, search and destroy. Over.
Search and destroy. Orders received and understood. Out.
He's really pulling out all the thespian stops there, isn't he?
Everything on the table for us all to enjoy.
The BBFC certificate thing says 15 contains strong language, violence and gore. You think, hooray! But it also contains, you know, incredible tedium and scenes of extended, protracted dullness. Apparently, The Rock was offered the other role, which is the role of Grimm, but he chose the role of Sarge on the grounds that it was more interesting. Well, I wish. I mean, there's nothing interesting happens at all. There's a bunch of monsters, and the monsters are quite well done. I mean, they tend to be sort of people in suits, but hey, that's what they are. And you get, you know, a ragbag of bits from Predator and Aliens and, you know, all those movies thrown together. And then two-thirds of the way through, it goes into the thing that made Doom the computer game success that it was, which is the point of view shoot 'em up, and they run around and a bunch of monsters happen and get shot, and that's the end of the film. The only interesting thing about it is that Rosamund Pike, who's in, is it Pride and Prejudice? Yes, I mean Pride and Prejudice. I keep wanting to say Sense and Sensibility. Pride and Prejudice, you know, a great British thesp, is in it as some kind of, you know, it's one of those typical roles in which she turns up with a white coat and she says, oh, no, I'm a biogenetic. And you think, no, you're not. You're Rosamund Pike. It's fine. Get on with it, you know, as you were. And it's absolute nonsense and, you know, pointless. The thing that really bothers me about these things is people play computer games because they get to control the action. Well, when you watch a film, it's like watching somebody else playing the game. I mean, I don't want to play computer games, but I want even less to watch somebody else playing a computer game for me, and thrice badly to sit in a cinema watching somebody else playing the computer game for me when they could be showing The Ninth Configuration or Ben-Hur. It's a big screen. Why waste it with all this stuff? Rubbish. You know, complete waste of time. Also out this week, Steam Boy, which is the new movie by Katsuhiro Otomo, who's the guy who directed Akira. And I was really surprised by this because it's been a long time coming. It's taken something like 8 years to get made, and it is apparently the most expensive. The word people use now, which is a term, is Japanimation. See how they did that? Took animation.
I follow that word.
And they put it together. Yeah, Japanimation, yes, but it's not mephitic, but it is Japanimation, you know. And it cost apparently $20 million, which is some kind of record. It doesn't sound very high, but it is a record. It's set in 1860s Britain, and there's a young boy whose grandfather and father, between them, have developed this incredible steam propulsion unit. And one of them wants to use it for evil, and the other wants to use it for good. And it's all set at the Great Exhibition in London. And I went into it thinking, you know, I think it's going to be visually impressive in the way that these things are, but actually narratively uninteresting, because that seemed to be the general whiff on it. And I thought it was really, really exciting. The visually, it's absolutely beautiful to look at. I mean, astonishingly well designed, as you would expect from the guy who's behind Akira. But in fact, the story I thought was very engrossing. It raises some serious philosophical issues in the same way, for example, that the re-release of Gojira does, because Gojira is actually a movie about the problems of inventing things and then them being used for weapons. And, you know, that's very much what Steam Boy is about. And I road tested it with my four-year-old, who thought it was great. It's PG certificate because it contains mild peril and violence. I love the phrase, mild peril. How can you be mildly perilous? But anyway, it contains mild peril and violence.
And what is the mild peril? Because this is...
The mild peril is that the world may end because this steam... Because, you know, it's being used to make weapons. And there's big battles and huge battles. I mean, really, actually
that
exciting
like
battles.
A four-year-old's film.
Well, he really liked it. They've seen Star Wars. It's, you know, battles in that sense. It's not, you know... You know what Star Wars is like? Well, imagine...
Never heard of it.
Imagine Star Wars, but here's the trick. Imagine it good and on Earth, and not by George Lucas. In fact, forget Star Wars. It's nothing like that. If you've got Star Wars in your mind, you're thinking of a whole other movie. It's, for the grown-ups, it's really, really well designed. And for the kids, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was a really interesting story.
First Toy Story was a PG.
Yeah.
All kinds of strange things turn up as PG, and you think,
do.
We're going to have to watch this first.
Obviously, it's, you know, my child is particularly brilliant. So obviously, for most kids, 8.
Your Newsnight Review colleague...
Who's that?
Mark Lawson.
Yes.
Wrote a very interesting piece the other day, specifically about this whole area which we've been talking about the problems of...
The
12 certificate. I'm trying to work out at what stage you are. And he said in this piece that he'd written that he clearly, I think he'd taken a 10-year-old to see War of the Worlds.
Yes, he did.
And desperately regretted it extremely, you know, well, this particular 10-year-old really got quite freaked out.
I was with him
in the
cinema when that happened, in fact. But I think the 12 certificate is being very well used by the BBFC. I mean, U basically means, you know, anyone at all, fine. PG means you want to watch it with your kids, you want to be careful about it. If they're sensitive about certain things, you know, parental guidance. 12 means we think you need to be 12. If you think you can get away with it younger, that's your responsibility. But the general feeling was below 8, you are stretching a point. Obviously, it's the parent's decision, but there is a certain responsibility which comes with that decision. And I'm very, I mean, I would, you know, I watch everything that my kids watch. Yeah. I am the sensor. I've become the sensor.
I have
but
a problem.
I think that's right.
I have a problem with Polar Express being a U.
Is it a U?
It is a U, yes. And I think definitely contains scenes of mild peril.
Is it a U, not a PG?
Well, the DVD's a U.
It may be that the IMAX version of it is PG. There was a case with a movie which, when they upped it to IMAX, the certificate was increased. I'm sure if the BBFC are listening, they'll correct me on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that there was a movie that was considered to be more perilous as a result of that. Anyway, okay.
I like the idea of the BBFC, all of them listening, like some huge court, and they all sit here on a Friday and they just all tune in. And if they are all listening, they will get in touch.
They will, yes. Okay. Well,
anything else new?
On the subject of the BBFC, Lower City, which is this Brazilian movie, which is getting great critical plaudits, it's the usual story. There's two guys, there's a pole dancer, they fall in love with a pole dancer, it threatens their friendship, you know, sex violence, blah, 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 stylishly shot. The guy who directed it used to be Walter Salles' assistant. You know, fine, I'm not as involved in it as everybody else is. I thought it was very, very ho-hum. But at the beginning of it, there's a cockfighting sequence, and I have a particular problem with cockfighting sequences, and I wondered why it hadn't been cut, and I checked with the BBFC website that it hadn't been cut, and I rang the BBFC and I said, look, my assumption is therefore that in fact you've got evidence that they have that they faked it, and they said yes, we have. And the BBFC quite rightly did what they did. They have got a very big down on actual cockfighting, so what they did was they sought assurances that the scene had been done properly, so that it's all faked and not, you know, no animals harmed, blah de blah de blah, and as a result of it, as a result of receiving those assurances and documentation for it, they passed it uncut. And the good point about this is it demonstrates, no matter how bad a press the Animals Act gets, it actually works. If the international marketplace simply says, sorry, you cannot have scenes of actual animal cruelty, if you want to have fictional sequences of animal cruelty, then go to the trouble of staging it. Use editing. It's like Amores Perros. You don't have to actually hurt animals to have scenes in which animals get hurt.
They're hard to watch that film and believe that you're not watching anything that isn't completely real.
No, well, I was really really surprised because it looked very convincing to me, but it turns out that they checked it out. So I'd just like to take this opportunity to say hats off to the BBFC. I mean, I know it's not singly them, as they themselves say. Obviously, what happens in America is just as important. But I think that that Britain is completely leading the way in terms of this, and I think it's something we should be very proud of.
This from Eamon says, oi, Kermo, just because Hollywood can't make a decent movie based on a computer game does not mean all computer games are rubbish.
Go on.
Ignorance is not becoming of such a geeky
movie. Which one
buff.
Isn't?
We were talking about Doom.
No, but which one isn't?
Well, he just says just because.
Well, give me an example this of one that isn't.
This is from it's an email. It's an email can't talk.
Yeah, but no, but does it say on it, you know, is he going to give me an example?
This is from Eamon at Sony Computer Entertainment Europe.
Oh, okay. Just fine. That I've well, I, think that kind of explains
okay.
that.
Okay, movie of the week.
Where the Truth Lies. There are things wrong with it, but it's an Atomy Goyen film, and I think it's really interesting, and Colin Firth is great in it.
We'll talk Narnia next week. It's our book on Thursday, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Certainly one of them, and we do a review of Narnia, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe on Friday's programme. Have a fantastic weekend. Back on Monday at 1. Drive comes next. You're listening to 5 Live.
Live news, live sport.